Now on Robinhood Radio, it's time for The Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage. David is a multimedia journalist with an online column at themediabeat.us, and he's reported since 2012 on ethical issues for the PBS network. He's also the author of a forthcoming memoir, A Question of Paternity, Life as an Unaffiliated Reporter. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning September 13th, 2024. For mass media consumers, there's no doubt at all this week over what's been the biggest story. The long-awaited meeting, thanks to ABC News, between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump in, well, it's always been called a debate, but of course it could never really be any such thing. It was, though, a showcase, a very clear showcase of the choice before us as a nation. In media folklore, such a television so-called debate has often been credited as utterly decisive in determining the eventual outcome on Election Day. Reporters were repeatedly this week calling this so-called debate a defining event as well as decisive, and were especially fond of using the word consequential. The very first ever TV debate is said to be a classic demonstration of such decisiveness. That was a constantly eulogized piece of broadcasting history, the 1960 confrontation between Richard Nixon and John Kennedy. The story goes that Kennedy won the presidency because he was favored by the visual medium of television, since he came across as the healthy, or at least healthy-looking man who glowed with a Hyannisport summer tan, whereas Nixon was pale and sallow, sweated noticeably, and his TV makeup failed to conceal his reportedly unattractive 5 o'clock shadow of a beard. Cited as proof of this victory for the visuals has long been a contemporary finding in post-debate polling, saying that people who watched the event did favor Kennedy, but those who only heard it on radio favored Nixon. More thorough and detailed historical research, however, has given us a different tale. There was, in fact, only one opinion poll that came up with this supposedly revealing distinction between the two mediums, media, and it suffered from a sampling problem. It didn't factor in the demographic information that radio listeners were predominant in rural areas, and TV viewers tended to live in cities where TV sets were at the time more numerous than in the countryside. Then, as now perhaps, rural voters tended to vote Republican, while Democrats were stronger in urban areas. It was Kennedy's greater organized strength in the cities that made the difference, not just his looks. But it has to be acknowledged that more recent history, very recent history, can attribute heavy significance to a single debate. President Joe Biden's lackluster performance against Trump in July panicked the Democratic Party into persuading him to make way for Harris. Not immediately, of course, but that debate was pretty damn critical to the whole process. And as for the Harris v. Trump fixture this week, prominent supporters and surrogates on each side, instantly in the on-location spin rooms, and then repeatedly ever since, have been fighting over how good their candidate was and how awful their opponent was. And of course, over the next 7 weeks, this will all continue uninterrupted, unless it's by a rematch of the contest, which currently looks highly unlikely. The Harris campaign has unsurprisingly asked for one. The Trump side will hardly be willing entrance into the ring again. During the run-up to the event, Trump's apparent vulnerabilities were pored over incessantly by commentators, with a consensus opining that his penchant for demeaning and denigrating women, and women of color especially, would be something he had to avoid or cover up when the sparring started. That seemed to be forgetting that to many of his followers, that penchant isn't a vulnerability at all, it's a virtue. But his real vulnerabilities, all too clear as the broadcast unfolded, turned out to be his own thin-skinned ego. Harris's debate prep strategy, and it was abundantly evident in performance, was to prod him pointedly in his sensitive areas. One bit of baiting was over the melting away of crowds at his rallies. Exhausted and bored, Harris said with a laugh. Another was Trump's pathetic toadying up to foreign dictators and being weak enough to get manipulated by them. And as well, of course, there was his day-by-day flip-flopping on abortion and being, in some neat phrasing to aim at the 78-year-old, confused about facts. However unmistakable these goading traps were, Trump couldn't help himself from falling or even diving right into some of them. ABC's David Muir asked him about the agreed bipartisan immigration bill that Trump torpedoed, and which Harris had just made a lot of political hay with. Muir said the bill that Trump killed would have put thousands of additional agents and officers on the border. But Trump just had to say, first, let me respond as to the rallies. Television's particular contribution to political debates, the simultaneous split screen, can leave the audience with an overall, lasting, and who knows, maybe decisive impression. Here we had, for example, the double image of Harris, her chin supported on her palm, smiling in a bemused kind of incredulity toward Trump, while he, adopting the different tactic of a fixed stare with narrowed eyes toward the camera, sputtered on unfathomably to condemn new immigrants in the Midwest cities for eating the pets of pre-existing residents. Such televisually rich moments could register for viewers as portraying a competent woman of leadership poised to turn the page decisively on a ranting representative of a prejudiced past. Or, if you're of a different persuasion, it's a picture of a complacent representative of the elite who's dismissive and out of touch with much perfectly justifiable outrage about a changing world. But really, how much difference will those televised 90 minutes make when we get to November? Harris herself delivered a revealing postscript to the broadcast. Within minutes, her campaign sent out a fundraising appeal asking for small dollar donations, $25 specifically, which said, "I just got off the debate stage." It was a little disingenuous as a device, since the email blast was obviously set up well in advance, but the subject line of her personally signed message was telling. Very plain-spoken, in fact. It said, "Debates don't win elections." To end my dispatch this week, let me offer a footnote on how this toe-to-toe contest of Harris versus Trump cast an unceremonious, maybe heavy shadow across what, only a few days previously, was a re-energizing, certainly a bright illuminating, of the so-called special relationship, capital S, capital R. The phrase, of course, means, in its familiar hackneyed wording, relations between this my adopted country and my one-time home, the UK. In London, the two nations put on a striking, or at least highly unusual, display of unity on the international stage. The head of the CIA, Bill Burns, and his British opposite number, MI6's chief Richard Moore, made a joint appearance discussing security issues at a so-called festival, the FT Weekend Festival, hosted by a media organisation, London's Financial Times newspaper. The secret services of both countries, huh? At a media shindig. Oh, and as well, US Secretary of State Tony Blinken also visited London for some more traditional-style diplomatic talks with his opposite number, the UK Foreign Secretary David Lammy, in order, according to their press statement, to strengthen UK-US strategic dialogue. This pair, too, went public with intelligence information about Iran providing Russia with ballistic missiles, and together they made a joint trip from London to Ukraine, a possible prelude to changing policies and giving Ukrainians permission to strike, with their American and British-supplied weaponry, deep into Russia's interior. So what is the shadow that's been cast since then between such close NATO friends? Well, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer, new in the job for just over 2 months now, is currently making his second visit to Washington, D.C. since taking office. The first one was for the July NATO summit. He has a one-on-one meeting today with President Joe Biden. But is he meeting the next president? Turns out that this week's big debate and other urgent campaigning events in the calendar have prevented Starmer from seeing either his fellow left-of-centrist Kamala Harris or his political polar opposite Donald Trump. They've both been too busy. If Harris wins, no harm done. The low-grade snub won't matter, and Starmer really doesn't take such things personally anyway. If Trump wins, though, there could be quite a serious fissure. Spy Chief Burns may keep his job, but Tony Blinken at State will certainly be off the scene, and more important than personnel, global policies will also be fissured between the long-time allies. On the two most foregrounded international crises, Trump could soon be taking Russia's side against Ukraine, and on the Israel-Hamas war, Trump will likely be more unquestioningly supportive of Israel than Biden has been, and very far from the deep reservations about support that Britain is now expressing under Starmer. For instance, he has halted or at least suspended British arms supplies to the Israelis, so they will not be employed in contravention of international humanitarian law. As for the Harris v. Trump confrontation when it came to this war, Harris reasserted the existing administration's insistence on Israel's right to defend itself, but she also said, quote, "Far too many innocent Palestinians have been killed, children, mothers." And she said the solution lay inevitably in a two-state solution where we can rebuild Gaza, where the Palestinians have security, self-determination, and the dignity they so rightly deserve. We, the TV audience, then saw and heard Trump insist he'd end the war, quote, "and fast," he said. But he didn't say how, maintaining only that it would never have started if he'd been president. That's all from the Media Beat this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.